So I've realised that I'm speaking in a section discussing policies and practice in Ireland, and I'm not really addressing that in my talk, but I'm just looking at stepping back a little bit and looking at persecution and defining that perhaps from a more children's rights perspective. And the reason I'm wearing two hats today is because a lot of this is based on PhD research, so I didn't want to have any copyright issues in when I go to submit or anything. So I think it's been really interesting to hear this morning a lot of people talking about the Convention on the Rights of the Child and the Best Interest Principle and how that relates to refugee protection or refugee procedures, and that's really what I'm about to talk about. And I'm going to try to read from my notes to keep on time, because I've timed it a couple of times, and otherwise I fear I'll do what I'm doing now and go over. So the pursuit of children's rights developed into an international movement during World War I and the interwar period. The campaign for children's rights largely centered on safeguarding and protecting children during times of war. This movement gained momentum during and in the aftermath of World War II. However, children were notably absent from the Convention Relating to the Status of Refugees 1951, which was developing at the same time and along the same lines. And so I hope to shine some light today on early and contemporary thoughts on the relationship between the children's rights movement and refugee law, without going into too much detail, because I have probably 10 minutes at this stage. And my hope is that this will lead to some lively exchanges about the role of the children's rights regime in the context of refugee determinations, and perhaps that would be more relevant in the afternoon sessions for those who are attending the training. So, as I've said, children were part of discussions surrounding human rights and the protection of human livelihoods, both in the interwar period and after World War II. Two declarations on children's rights came about before the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and the first was introduced in 1924 as a consequence of the Save the Children movement and its predecessor, or its kind of beginning prior to World War I. Children's rights as we know it now, however, did not begin to dominate discourse until the late 1980s and early 1990s, and this is largely attributable to the civil rights movement and work undertaken within the United Nations structure. And as you'll notice, if you go back and look at the declarations, which weren't binding on states, but they very much portrayed the child as vulnerable and in need of protection. But it wasn't until the civil rights movement and later the CRC that children would be seen as rights holders in their own right. And I think that this has important implications in the refugee context. During this period where children were beginning to be seen as rights holders, and even today, themes began to emerge and continue to develop. The themes which have developed in other disciplines and a little bit in the law discipline as well could largely be categorized as liberation versus protection, welfare versus control, or interest versus will. And the conflicts inherent in all attempts to categorize children's rights in this way relate to evolving capacities and the child's right to take part in decisions made on their behalf, and the role of the parent or the state in deciding what is in the child's and or the family's best interest. So the themes that came out post-CRC, you see typically categorized as either life, development, and survival rights, including social and economic rights, which are also typically referred to as provisional, participative rights and protective rights as well, and this is often coined as the 3 P's approach. In the context of refugee law, we're dealing with decisions made by one government based on the practice of another government or circumstances in another jurisdiction, and the universality of the above frameworks and discussions, specifically relating to the CRC rights, and also the ways those rights fall within the refugee determinations process need to be questioned and unpacked. So I think, in my view, it's arguable that not considering the development of children's rights law and corresponding case law in that area in the context of international protection could potentially be a little bit irresponsible. In the area of refugee law, on the other hand, the United Nations and its predecessor, the League of Nations, developed a series of regimes to provide protection to persons whose state could not or would not protect them. The evolution of this area of international law began to take shape in 1921, followed by the introduction of the International Refugee Organization to become the High Commissioner for Refugees. But it was not until after World War II that the world would really realize that the refugee problem was not a temporary one, requiring quick fixes for categories or groups of persons. So the 1951 convention was the combination of various arrangements and declarations preceding it, but only one article within the convention really sets out to define refugee and who qualifies as a refugee. There are obviously other principles that you could add in, but really principally only Article 1 deals with who qualifies, and the rest of the convention deals with the rights that children have or people have access to once they're recognised. So there's only one mention really in the convention that relates to children, and that's around education, but again, that's once recognised. But it doesn't exclude children, so that's important to remember. But it is therefore necessary to seek other sources to begin to understand the reasons children may require protection, and this should include developments in general children's rights arena. Despite, again, the similar context in which both legal frameworks emerged, there seemed to have been very little interaction between the two during the drafting of either instrument. It's also important to note that the CRC came into force 37 years after the 51 Convention, so we can see where the priorities were lying at that point in history. But it wasn't until after the CRC came into force that we saw a real articulation of the fundamental rights of children in refugee determinations and discourse on the whole, with the exception of some once-off arrangements, such as the Kinder Transport and other initiatives, and also the inclusion of a definition for unaccompanied minors in the 1946 statute for the IRO. One example, however, of overlapping themes relates to forced labour or ILO conventions, which reference children as early as 1919. But interestingly, the ILO participated in the drafting of both the CRC and the 51 Convention. And I think that there's a clear historical and contemporary overlap here for child protection seekers. And now I'm going to kind of skip over tens of thousands of words of PhD research, but I'm going to summarise and say, based on principles and rights contained within the CRC, child refugees tend to fall within one of three main umbrella categories for applicants. The first framework deals with children as vulnerable, needing protection from war, conflict, and indiscriminate violence. This framework uses the protectionist approach, which exists in mainstream children's rights discourse, and reflects a relatively strict interpretation of the 51 Convention. UNHCR, for example, in their guidance on Article 1A for children, notes that, I'm sorry, that's not the full correct title, notes that child-specific forms of persecution relevant to this ground may include female genital mutilation, underage recruitment, and child trafficking. Other examples, such as family and domestic violence, forced or underage marriage, bonded or hazardous labor, forced prostitution, and child pornography are also set out in both on the UNHCR guidelines, but also in the Convention on the Rights of the Child and her optional protocols. And the second framework deals with the child as a rights holder, which views the child as having certain inalienable rights, like the right to education, reflecting both a liberationist and protectionist approach. This framework reflects a more modern interpretation, I would argue, of the 51 Convention, taking into account the developing laws relating to children's rights, where children are viewed more as subjects of law, rather than merely objects of law requiring protection. Capacity and development rights may fall within this heading, including the right to hold a political opinion or to practice a religion. Violations of socioeconomic rights might also fall within this category. UNHCR also notes that economic, social, and cultural rights are essential to the child's right to survival and development, and a violation of these rights may amount to persecution, for example, where the child's right to an adequate standard of living could lead to an intolerable predicament. Denial of medical treatment, in particular where the child suffers from a life-threatening illness, may also amount to persecution, but it also may, an accumulation of a number of violations, less serious ones, could amount to persecution. I've actually prepared a list of some sample European cases, and I can circulate that after, but I sent it on to the organisers as well, so they might be able to give you early access to them, but you can also refer to the European Database of Asylum Law and UNHCR guidelines on Article 1A2 in the case of children for more examples. The third framework, the final one, deals with the child as secondary to the adult applicant. This framework reflects centuries of children's rights theorizing around the parents as the natural carer and also the natural governor of their children's rights. And this framework deals with the child as an appendage to family claims in a way. This category also relates to beliefs or views imputed onto the child. The CRC rights, which may come into play here, are those relating to non-discrimination, regardless of parent status or views, and also the right to family life and privacy more generally. In cases where the family or home might be the locus of persecution, the child's claim might fall under one or the other, the previous categories, though. But all three categories loosely reflect the 3P's approach to categorizing CRC rights, with some movement between the three. I think it's also important to remember to note, however, that any form of persecution as discussed throughout must have a link with a convention ground to qualify for refugee protection. But the convention ground, according to UNHCR's guidance again, does not need to form the basis of the claim. It must just have a link. At present, we could see interactions between the two legal regimes in various ways in relation to the five grounds, the convention grounds, religion, political opinion, particular social group, nationality, race. It's for this reason the categories are broken up in this way rather than in respect of the five grounds, because taking this approach potentially creates a framework based on the whole spectrum of children's rights and could arguably be slightly more child-centered. However, we have to bear in mind that the five grounds are deeply ingrained in refugee law practice and theorizing, and thus for a legal practitioner, it might be better to categorize child claimants in respect to the categories. But the alternative is that there's a possibility of merging the two. Children are typically considered to fall most neatly within the membership of the particular social group ground, and it's increasingly being accepted that childhood is an immutable characteristic. And this has undoubtedly been aided by the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which articulates the characteristics of childhood. Additionally, however, childhood is marked by an evolving capacity to reason, which can be traced back to early philosophers and is also enshrined in the CRC. And in applying this principle, children may then develop political opinions or religious beliefs, which transgress the majority belief system. And evidence of this being incorporated into refugee law can be observed in cases of arranged marriages or sexual orientation. And there's a wealth of case law internationally dealing with these circumstances. Race and nationality may also be invoked in addition to other grounds as a standalone ground for fearing persecution. There's an example in the Irish High Court where a girl appellant arguably would have been denied education on the basis of being of Roma descent if returned to her home country, Serbia, and that would amount to persecution in the context of the Refugee Act. But there are a number of cases along that same vein. This line of cases also raises questions again about the universality of the children's rights regime and its relationship to refugee law. There are examples of both cases where courts progressively note differential treatment in refugee source countries, which affects the child's access to their CRC-based rights, and decisions which take a more cynical view of children's rights in the context of its universal application, and by doing so perhaps supplies a narrower interpretation of persecution. If we envisage bringing the two approaches together, however, it's perhaps necessary to link protective rights as set out in the first category of child applicants with the particular social group ground. Both religion and political opinion may fall neatly within the second category, which focuses on the child's development and socioeconomic rights. Race and nationality may also fall within the second category, in particular where race or nationality impacts upon the child's rights to access education or other basic rights. Both groups may also relate more to a third category, where the child is secondary to the parent's claim or where their beliefs are imputed onto the child. However, these are not constants. Yep. These categories must remain fluid, I think, to allow for the unique situation of child refugees around the world. More than one category and more than one convention ground may apply in some cases, but the task of the PhD project anyway is to look to synthesize as much as possible the categories of child applicants considering children's rights stemming from the CRC and the five convention grounds in such a way that it might narrow that divide. So what we know is that child refugees are those who have experienced persecution in a variety of circumstances, including threat to life, trafficking, and restricted access to socio and economic rights. We also know that children were largely invisible within refugee discourse until the late 20th century. And we also know, at present, that children are viewed as rights holders in their own right, and thus those rights specific to children can be breached. So I'll leave you with this question to think about today and in the afternoon. When do breaches of children's rights norms amount to persecution in the context of refugee determinations?